You're listening to the Table Talk podcast, brought to you by Food Matters Live.
Welcome to the Table Talk podcast. I'm Stephen Gates. I'm a TV presenter and broadcaster specialising in food and science. Now, this podcast will explore how the food industry is responding to the challenges of the increased demand for plant-based food and the vegan consumer, as well as looking at the plant-based trends, hopefully for 2020. Now, we've got an amazing panel here. We've got Kate Yateman-Smith, Marketing Controller of Premier Foods.
Hello.
Tom Peters, Global Director, New Businesses Deliveroo.
Hi there.
Suzanne Robinson, Managing Director of Happen UK.
Hi.
Now, let's start off. And if I can start off with you, Kate, because I guess you're part of a huge food company producing this stuff. What effect has veganism had on the food industry over the last year? What's the scale of change?
So I think the change obviously comes from what the consumer wants from their products. And what we've seen is that this demand has increased for a number of different reasons. So there's animal welfare reasons, there's health reasons, there's environmental reasons. And they all play into the consumer trend work that companies then use to innovate products. And alongside that, we then see a huge amount of innovation from companies such as my own, as well as across all different parts of the food industry, not just, you know, manufactured goods. And that rise has been going on for a while, actually. It seems like reasonably recently, but in the background, that trend has been going on for maybe the last sort of 5 years. I think...
So I've sort of really, really felt it over the last 1 to 2 years, but you reckon it's been in process for a lot longer?
Yeah, and you know, this future gazing on what trends might be coming starts a while beforehand, and then the products start to hit shelves at a certain point that feed that consumer demand. And I think the thing that's interesting is this trend is about plant-based, and people are dipping in and out of it. So we know that 86% of people who buy plant-based products are also meat eaters. So it's not a very specific trend that only targets a certain amount of the population. It actually goes much wider and is much more kind of ubiquitous and targets anyone who likes to eat food and drink.
Yeah. Now, working for a big food company, have you seen cannibalisation of other areas, other categories, dropping, and the sort of vegan or plant-based categories rising?
I mean, I haven't experienced that particularly. What I've seen is a lot of people trading into plant-based options. And I suppose with that, it's an incrementality as well. There must be an impact somewhere about what it's doing.
Someone's taking a hit somewhere.
But I suppose my focus is very much on like how the plant-based sector is growing.
Yeah.
Obviously, some of that volume or value must come from other brands that are losing share.
So, okay, Suzanne, before we started recording, you said, hang on, the plant-based and veganism, it's not the same thing. Can you explain a little bit more about what you mean?
I think building on what Kate was saying, the trend around plant-based has been sort of growing for quite a while because of various factors. What's interesting is that everybody's using this word vegan, and it's becoming synonymous with so many different health benefits that actually I think a lot of people, and you know, we deal a lot with different consumers, different ages, and they put this word out there, and then you say to them, what does it actually mean to be vegan? And they say, well, you eat plants, or you don't eat meat, and that's it, or it's healthy. It means this product is healthy. And you think, oh, okay. And then you sort of explore it.
So it's sort of tagged with various different issues
rather than just it's almost rule. It's a bit like the word free from. For a lot of people, the word free from means it's health. It's like a shortcut. But people don't really understand what it means because they're looking for something that makes them feel good. And if they can say, oh, it's vegan, so it must be good for me.
Yeah.
Because a lot of people don't actually have a huge amount of real understanding around health. So they'll come out with things, but once you go below the surface of something, they'll say, oh, it's high in vitamins, or it's supposed to be really good for me because it's gluten-free. And then you say, well, what does that actually mean? What benefit is that? And unless you actually, you know, have a real disorder that means you can't eat gluten. Most people don't really know what these things are.
Yeah.
And vegan, I think, is falling into that camp.
Go on then, give us the pitch for vegan. So you speak to lots of food companies about how their approach to you know, building products and things like that.
Yeah,
so what would you say to a company that says, all right, we need to pitch this is veganism? What would you say the cloud of words is that defines vegan?
Vegan. I think it pulls in that people will assume it's healthy. In its vaguest terms, they'll think it's plant-based, it's got nothing to do with meat. Some people will say that means there's no dairy in it. Some people will assume that means it's gluten-free and it's got nothing that's going to give them, if they've got food intolerances or those sorts of things, so there's no nasties in there. Then they'll also say, oh, and it must be, it's really sustainable, it's good for the planet, it's something that we should be
flipping
doing.
Out. There's a lot of stuff going on here, isn't there?
Oh my goodness. And but what you also see is because of that, it's being influenced by other categories. So whereas vegan started in food years ago, you know, it was very much an ethical response to the food chain and to what people were eating. And it was a very moral decision to become a vegan. Now you look at vegan cosmetics, we've got skincare, you can buy vegan clothes. And people are seeing it, so they're assuming that it means it's a sustainable, if something's vegan, it's sustainable.
It's a whole glow. It's a glow to it.
Oh, I like that language.
Do you like that?
It does. Yeah, I think people. It's one of those things that people can justify. They're eating something and they say, well, it's vegan, so it has this whole assumption, all these assumptions around it, and as we know, in reality, that isn't the truth. That isn't the truth.
Yeah.
Which is why when we were at Food Matters, there was so much heated debate from people in the audiences, from the panels, because. You know, the people who know what they're talking about, quite rightly, get very frustrated because it's being misused, misquoted. I'm not sure all the media is particularly clear on it sometimes. You know, people will get a certain level of information, and that's it.
Is that a challenge, or is it a risk, or is it an advantage?
Confusion?
The fact that...
I think the confusion is that people will, once they realise... Once people realise what vegan really means, and it will come out eventually, you get this backlash from people feeling like they've been let down, they've been misled, they've been sold something, and then they feel stupid.
And I think that's a risk. To feel stupid.
That's a risk. Yeah. But also, I think, Kate, you were talking a little bit about the difference between, you know, vegan, to actually claim vegan, there's a whole series of things as a manufacturer that you have to adhere to.
Yeah.
And, you know, if the consumer perception is one thing, and the legal reality is another, and what you can claim, then, you know, it's ripe for a bit of a clash that's going to happen.
I think Suzanne's absolutely right. But with some of the positive halo that comes with vegan, I think there is also a reason to talk about plant-based, because vegan has some of these connotations that, as well as being brilliant, can also be quite scary for people. So on the one hand, vegan goes beyond a dietary choice in its traditional sense, and that can be more of a lifestyle decision rather than just how you choose to consume food.
Actually, who's vegan around here? Anyone vegan? Only Matt. It's our broadcast producer is vegan. Anyone going vegan for January?
Possibly.
I think I am.
We are talking about it in the team.
Yeah.
And I think because we met the ladies from Veganuary, and just it was like, oh, okay. And I know some of my team are going.
Yeah. I mean, we're going to be doing a big campaign around it in January with thousands of our restaurant partners. And I think what's really interesting, picking up on what sort of the conversation's been already, the way we think about it is there's increased awareness around this. So this, I think this idea of it's more acceptable in terms of popular media. You've got more social influencers. You've got obviously the inevitable Game Changers thing. There's a South Park episode on plant-based and vegan. And also what we see from Deliveroo is it's a lot more accessible. So you know, the great thing about our platform is we see things in real time.
I'm fascinated by the Deliveroo experience of veganism. Do you have statistics? Can you pass the information so that you can understand the amount of vegan meals or plant-based meals you're delivering?
Yeah, so we've seen over the past 2 years, we've seen over a 300% increase across all markets. It's not just a London trend. What's interesting is when you dive into other cities outside the UK, we can see on a restaurant by restaurant level, day of week level, what people are ordering. So I think, as Kate was saying at the beginning, this is now a mainstream trend. Mm. I think the interesting thing that we see is, you know, the big restaurant partners that we work with, so the Greggs, the Wagamamas, the Burger King. I was just reading something on my way here that McDonald's are introducing veggie dippers in January. So all of the big brands that consumers know and love and use to get, you know, food delivered have got, you know, these vegan, veggie, plant-based options on there. And we saw this with healthy eating as well. Like, consumers love shortcuts, and they a lot of people, their lives are busy, they don't have time to read through all the blurb that's associated with the product. What they want is trusted brands, which they'll go to, and they will trust those brands to be giving them something which is authentic and real. I think that one of the challenges is, if a brand doesn't do something which is authentic and real, and consumers are either confused or lied to or just don't have the right information, that's where we can get into tricky ground in this space.
And that's when you lose them as well. So I'm fascinated by the Deliveroo experience of this. Hmm. Now, Deliveroo, and correct me if I'm wrong, but Deliveroo is a platform where you are supplying the consumer with what they want. Now, does Deliveroo want there to be more vegan meals delivered, or are you just responding to consumer demand?
No, so we do things. We're a marketplace, so we bring together consumers, restaurants, and then we have riders who work with us to deliver food. We also have our own delivery kitchen network that we call Super Kitchens. So we have hundreds of restaurant partners where we've worked with them to build these kitchens. And I think the really interesting thing that you know, we do is, you know, our platform thrives if we could give consumers what they want. Mm. And, you know, because we're such a data-rich business, we can go to restaurant partners and say, hey, look, in this area, we're seeing more searches for vegan, plant-based, or whatever. You should potentially think about, we call them virtual brands, but...
And is that happening? So is that definitely a trend that you're seeing?
We have restaurants where... So Wagamama is actually, and Pizza Express are two good examples of this, where they have launched vegan-specific brands. So you can have Wagamama vegan and Pizza Express vegan. Mm-hmm. And the reason why they've done that is because they recognise that this is a trend. They recognise that consumers want that easy option. And rather than having to root through a menu and find the options, it's great. This is a whole menu designed for you. Every dish on here is something that you can select. And we work with all of our restaurant partners to help them with that and give them data and insight and say, hey, look, in January, maybe you should think about creating more additional dishes, putting them at the top of your menu so that when someone opens up the app and scrolls through, they can go, oh, great, veganuary, I'm going to maybe try this, swap out a meat option for more of a plant-based option. If that's the top option on the top of the app and they can just click on that, in two clicks, they can have that food on their way to them and it can be with them in 30 minutes.
But Deliveroo itself presumably can't be seen to be preferring vegan food, because you're a marketplace. You're offering what the consumer wants, and I think that's a really special position, isn't it? So you're seeing these trends move rather than other companies having to promote them. You are responding in it.
Yeah, we're in a privileged position where, you know, we give consumers choice and we give consumers information, and, you know, choice is about giving them the broadest possible selection on the platform. So that's working with, you know, all the great big brands, but also working with small brands as well. So there's independent restaurants, and giving them access to consumers that are opening up our app and looking for food. And then the second thing is making sure that we have features in our app that make it easy for people to find those foods. So that's things like, for example, shortcuts at the top of the app where you click on an image and it pulls up healthy food for you. Little filters where you can click on and go, right, show me only vegan or vegetarian dishes here. Now, what I think is really interesting for us is going to be, as this becomes more mainstream, what are the terms that people are looking for, and how do we give them the quickest way of finding the food that they want? But for us, it's about giving people, you know, that choice, that information, and that freedom to, you know, swap out that meat burger for a veggie burger. If they want to be able to do that.
Okay, so I think we should turn on Matt, our podcast producer here, and so he's the vegan in the room. What do we think of him? So from Yeah, he's suddenly sort of breathed in a little bit. He's tucked his tummy in. Now, from delivery's point of view, is Matt a loyal customer? Is he a frequent orderer of takeaway meals? Is he more valuable to you than a carnivore?
We have an aspiration to feed people three times a day. We're a long, long way from that at the moment. The average person orders maybe a couple of times. Small pub.
But I'm saying, what's the difference between a vegan customer and a carnivorous customer? Do they have differences in the way that they interact with the platform? Do you think?
No. Ultimately, it doesn't matter if you're vegan, vegetarian, love eating burgers, love fried chicken. It's your entry point into the world of delivery is the same. You open up the app and you'll see the options you want. We do have some personalization in there. So, for example, at the top,
your point of view. From Deliveroo's point of view, how valuable is the vegan customer compared to the kind of? And I know that you're going to say they're all valuable, but do they order more frequently? Do they order? Do they spend more when they order? Do they spend less?
Well, I don't know. Like Tom, I could be wrong here, but what I would imagine from the data that I work with a lot is that a lot of people ordering vegan menus off your platform are not necessarily vegans. So, for example, I ate off the Wagamama's vegan menu a couple of days ago because the food is just crazy good. Mm. And that is an option that we have now that you wouldn't have had previously. So we think that's what's really interesting. If you look at the number of vegans in the population, it's 2% to maybe growing. Yeah. If you look at the number of people who are trying to reduce meat in their diet, it's, plus 50%. And so I suspect that the data driven towards making vegan or plant-based choices is more driven by the mainstream consumer than it is by the vegan consumer.
But I'm interested in how you view the vegan consumer. So from Premier Foods' perspective, is the vegan consumer a new thing that you want to get on board with your brands because there's a long-term value to them? Are they more fickle because there are lots of new products coming out? How do you approach that consumer? And I know that they're all lovely people, but I'm interested in you're making money from this, and how do you view that consumer differently?
So I think it's our consumer is plant-based rather than vegan, and that was a deliberate decision, and that is because our positioning is very much about positive nutrition in. So we actually have gone on the health angle. Veganism doesn't have to be healthy. You can eat a bag of sugar and be a vegan. You can eat a deep fried chips and be a vegan, but our angle into it actually was health. So we were like getting the good plants into your diet that make you feel more healthy. So that kind of took us down a direction of plant-based, which is a slightly different positioning to maybe eating a McDonald's vegan product. But that positive nutrition is something that we saw when I was working with Suzanne, who's also on the panel, about what consumers want to do and how they want to feel good about their choices. And that has ultimately led into a bit of the halo effect that we see on vegan nutritionally. I think the thing that's a minefield for Premier, and again, Suzanne touched on it, is when vegan becomes conflated with free from. So free from dairy or free from egg. And as a sort of labelled food manufacturer, we need to be really careful there. So we always talk in the plant-based language because plant-based just means getting more plants into your diet made to a vegan recipe. It doesn't mean free from egg and dairy, which is like a more staunch vegan or allergen based position. So I think that's some of the path that we're kind of trying to navigate at the moment is that if you want to be a vegan brand, you might set out to do something slightly differently to if you want to be a plant-based brand.
Okay, there's lots of subsets now. I think there isn't like a vegan consumer. I think Suzanne will know this, but there are lots of different entry points for people, and to say there's one type. I think one of the things that we were talking about before was the 40, 50, 60-year-old consumer who's more health aware and sees eating less red meat or less meat as actually a good option to prolong their life.
Yeah.
So you've got the sort of the younger, more socially conscious consumers who are adopting more plant-based eating. They're also drinking less. They're more health aware. And then you've got people in their sort of 40s, 50s, 60s who are also more health conscious and are taking note of that as well. So it's this kind of perfect storm of lots of different groups coming together, some for health reasons, some for environmental reasons, some for kind of animal welfare reasons. And what's happening is all of this is kind of coming together into this plant-based, vegan, vegetarian trend And as a commercial business, what we will do is pick up on those trends, very similar to what Kate is doing, and make sure that if a consumer's looking for that product, we provide them with a product that they want. It's not this sort of blanket sort of single view of what a vegan is. I think it's changing at an incredibly rapid rate.
Mm. Okay. Now, Suzanne, your expertise is really in unlocking sort of hidden insights into sort of brands and categories and things like that. Now, when you're talking to the big brands, what is it that the big brands miss that they're hidebound by their corporate status not to admit about the category? Give us some of the juice on the consumer and what you know their quirks.
Well, I think it's fair to say that when you're working in the area of insight and trends, you're looking for ways in. You're unlocking frustrations, unmet needs. Mm. It's very difficult in the food category to talk about unmet needs because especially in the developed markets, we're overwhelmed with food options. So it's not an unmet need, but it's definitely an undermet need. And you're looking for ways in, and you're trying to spot what's going to become big. And Kate alluded to this. I mean, we'd identified 3 years ago that plant-based in particular, not necessarily vegan, but plant-based, had the potential to become really big for lots of very key reasons. One being the Generation Y. Were actually that they were challenging the norms around our approach to health.
Quick definition of Generation Y.
If you're between the age of about 19, 20, and about 34, 35, you're what's called a Gen Y. You're a hero generation. Mm. You can tell that I'm the older generation. I'm Gen X because I'm quite cynical about it. But there you go. But what I would say is the absolute positive from Gen Y is that they said, you know what, health is no longer just about our physical being. It's not about diet. It's not about no pain, no gain, those sorts of things that I grew up with. It's actually about what I get back, the positives. And what are you doing for me emotionally and mentally, not just physiologically?
And that's a tangible change, you think?
Absolutely massive. Yeah. They are a generation that has said, I don't want compromise. We talk, our shortcut around Gen Y and food in particular is I want and. I want it tasty. I want it healthy. I'd like it convenient. I'd like it at a price point that is acceptable to me. And can you make it absolutely amazing as well? Oh, and can you give me a story about where these products come from? Who's made it? Where has it come from? Can you be ethically produced? Can you make sure that you're not doing anything to damage the environment? No compromise. And. Mm. Whereas I was a generation that, if I wanted low fat, I had to give up on taste. Yeah. That sort of stuff. And I think that is quite difficult for a lot of my generation in quite senior positions in our clients to get their head around. It's like, well, at some point we have to compromise. We can't give them everything. We can't give them the world and not make money on this or something like that. But it's forcing everybody. The positive is it's forced everybody to reappraise stuff. But within that context, you then have to spot, is this going to be a big thing or is this going to be a fad? Because if I'm about to invest money behind this, And my factories and I've got a lot of responsibility. I've got to be sure that we're doing the right thing by everybody rather than a huge expensive mistake. And I think the interesting thing for us around the plant-based one is at first thought, because it's a different generational driver, it's just a bit of veg, for goodness sake. Really, is that going to be, is that going to be massive? And then you start to say, no, plants, the positive nutrition, the emotional well-being. And then, as we talked about, as Tom mentioned, it's not just Gen Y. You suddenly realise that plants, the benefits of a plant-based diet can be phenomenal, not just for sports people, but in terms of how you age, how you look after your body. And you can actually, even if you're in your 60s, converting to plant-based diets can have a massive impact on your hormonal makeup and everything. So it's never too late. Mm. So suddenly you can start to see why something that on the surface might be a bit of a fad, or there's only 2% of people in the population that are vegan, you say it's not just about vegan, it's a much, much bigger opportunity, and it's not going to go away. And then you have the people who are like, well, I like my meat, and it's nothing to do with plants. It's actually about, oh, now you're telling me I can't eat meat, or I shouldn't eat meat, how do I reverse that? And that's a different driver So suddenly you've got this whole population, as we've just talked about, for all sorts of different reasons that are going to buy into this context. So it's, you know, trying to show clients that this is not about small brands that are trying
to
do.
Is it quite hard pushing them beyond?
Well, it's less hard now because, of course, it's on everybody's agenda. I'm sure there'll be quite a few of our clients that'll be listening to this podcast, guys. but you know, it's the ones who spot the trend early are the ones who catch it. Yeah. The rest of them will then fall. And you know, Kate has had to challenge quite a lot within her business to get Plantastic out there.
Yeah, so. I mean, we did a deck that was, you know, why plants? When we were first talking about flexitarianism 3 years ago, it was like, what is this kind of NASA terminology that you're bringing to the house? I think, you know, you kind of say things like, you know, plants are having an uprising, and people think about, you know, like beetroot's a great example. It was something like really naff that you used to have at your nan's house. It came out of a jar. Mm. You push it to the side of your plate. Oh, yeah. Oh, and now it's like purple is the colour of Instagram. You know, you have beetroot brownies, you have beetroot smoothies, and like, what a journey that, you know, used to be 60p a jar, you can now probably pay £5 for a beetroot brownie somewhere in London. So I mean, I think that shows a journey in itself, that's how plants are kind of forming part of the dialogue about people feeling emotionally good about the food they eat. And again, we did like a lot of work on colour on the brand, because you can really like eat the rainbow with plants.
Can you give us a little bit of a storyline of the gestation of the brand?
Ooh, so let Suzanne jump in and help me. But we looked at Premier to form a health brand, Premier Foods to form a health brand, and our starting point on this was kind of consumer up, and doing a lot of consumer work with Suzanne's team. So a mixture of and quant work, we kind of started to see this positive nutrition trend, and that was the gem. Positive nutrition was
and how
the,
long ago did
I mean about start? 3 years,
yeah.
Yeah, and that was the gem. And then from there, it was like, what is the best way to do positive nutrition? And it was plants. And the reason for that is because it's just so instinctive that plants are good for you. You grew up with the adage of five of your five a day. You understand that, you know, no one ever got overweight eating too many fruits and veg. You know that, you know, when you were small and you were hungry, you were told to have a piece of fruit. Like, everyone grew up with that, so they really easily understand how plants are healthy, which becomes a bigger halo effect for what plant-based can be, which is where we then evolved into the Plantastic brand. And I think the other part of that was the emotional well-being, like you say, the giving consumers a reason to feel good about their food choices. And they want to feel good. You know, this Generation Y is hashtag living their best life. And they want to know they've made a good decision. They can feel physically good about it and emotionally good about it, knowing that they haven't compromised, but they've still made a good decision on their snacks or meals.
I think that has some really interesting implications to brands as well. And this is something that came up at the panel when we were talking about the challenge that big consumer brands have. So your sort of your Unilevers, your P&Gs, and trying to move to create brands that resonate with this audience. And then you have this wave of new brands. So, you know, whether it's Impossible, Halo Top, All Plants, Tenzig, you know, they're all these brands, as Suzanne said, have got a narrative behind them, and they've got authenticity around them. And when, and that's what consumers want, and the brands that work well, the brands where they bring together, you know, Halo Top's a really good example, it's a brand I love.
Just explain what Halo Top is.
So Halo Top is an ice cream, but they do a dairy free version. It's low calorie. It's indulgent. It's got a really nice tone of voice to it. Just like the experience you get as a consumer when you get a tub and you open it is a really good experience. And the established brands out there, the Ben and Jerry's and the Häagen-Dazs, are really struggling against some of these new entry brands. And something like All Plants, which I'm sure some people listening to this would be aware of, which is a frozen meal business. Frozen food was never particularly sexy, but it's now being completely reinvented, and you can get boxes of really high quality, well made, nutritious, fully plant based meals delivered to your home or office. It's got bright colours, great packaging. I think there's definitely some beetroot colour in there as well. And these brands know how to engage with consumers. We work with some of those brands, so we can give them. So one of the things that we help them with is sampling. So giving consumers the opportunity to try this product at home, either for free or as part of a bundle with some other food that they're ordering. And once the consumers try that product for the first time, it's like, oh, actually, that was really nice. It's like, I wasn't expecting that. And then that brand then becomes something which they've had in their home, and then they'll see it around somewhere, whether it's in a supermarket or online, and then they'll try it. And I think it's this wave that's building up, and I think we're going to see some really interesting consolidation in this space. So Graze was acquired by Unilever. I think there's going to be some more brands that will.
It's already started.
Yeah,
they're already starting to try and buy
these brands up. But that doesn't mean I think we'll see more and more new brands come through. Some will die out. Some will rise. But they're all responding to this consumer interest in having good brands that resonate with me, and I've got a high quality product that fits their need.
I mean, I actually think it's really good that some of the big guys are buying some of those smaller brands, because some of the smaller brands, the big issue for them is getting to scale and getting the distribution. Yeah. And where the bigger, well-established businesses and, the big consumer giants, they've got that distribution, they've got that supply chain network. And actually, who wins? We all should win as individuals. Yeah. We should have more choice. It should be easier for us. I mean, we've talked a lot about plant-based and the benefits and the emotional and well-being, but convenience is still for your industry, for Deliveroo, but for most consumers, convenience is increasingly a way of life. We can't, a lot of us have this halcyon view of being able to grow our own vegetables and then eat straight from the garden, etc. But that takes a lot of time, and time is something that's a lot of
money.
People, yeah.
I had an allotment. It was costing me about 10 times as much as buying.
Absolutely. So the view of it, the rose-tinted view of it, is amazing. And I'm sure at some stage we'll all end up there. But in the short term, until that really happens, we need convenience. Yeah. And just being able to have a few of these great brands is great, but only being able to buy it in limited outlets, or only if you're in the city centres and not when you're out in more the suburbs or the countryside, it's really not viable. We should be able to normalise this and to take it mainstream as possible. So I do see a real synergy, and I think that's increasingly where some of the big established brand houses are going. They're looking to nurture some of those small businesses. They recognise that there is a synergy there between them, so why can't they help each other? And usually the smaller guys are usually ahead of the trend, because they can specialize, they can start very small, and then at some point they're going to need somebody to help them to get that distribution
and
network.
Lots of money. Now we could gas about this forever, but I think we should wrap it up by going around the table and looking a bit of the future, really. Now, what I'd love, and I know this is tricky, but I'd love some specifics, rather than saying this is going to get bigger and it's going to be lovely and everyone's going to be cosy and it's all going to be green and veggie, some actual specifics about what you think will crop up, and heck, numbers, if you have them, you have projections of how things are likely to change, and different products that we're likely to see, or even different ingredients that you think are just around the corner, about to explode. And I know that future gazing is a fool's game, but let's be those fools. Right, so I think we should probably start with Kate. What's the future hold for Premier Foods?
The data that we've seen, it's from Kantar, is that about a third of the population buy plant-based every week.
And that's a plant-based what? Not just buying carrots when they bought carrots, but plant-based what?
So, yeah, this is like plant-based as a sort of manufactured product, so not as a piece of fruit or vegetables. And then I think, what we've seen in the last 5 years is a 300% increase in plant-based purchases, and the market is now worth $3.4 billion. So that kind of just gives a size of where we are. And the last numbers that I saw was growing at about 15.4%.
So possibly we'll get that another 15% next year.
Yeah, and it's interesting with trends. Again, you could say that this is the sort of gradual build, and then it will go into, proliferation and even bigger build, or you could say it's at the beginning of the cycle. But what we know about all trends is that this isn't a small base anymore. 3.4 million is not a small base. So your numbers tend to be a lot higher, obviously, when you're coming from a small base. So
and these things, for a company like Premier Foods, that is huge, huge information that you have to act on?
Oh, I think it's huge information that you have to act on, and you want to be part of it. It's a way of modernising your business and having the right, you know, food and drink solutions to stay relevant. I think we've talked about it a bit as well, but if the trend started with the Gen Y consumers, I think it's also about being in the right place in the store, or, you know, for a food service business, in the right, you know, e-com environment as well.
Because, and that's been quite fuzzy for a while, hasn't it? Where these things actually sit?
Well, I suppose it's more just making sure you're in the aisles that are travelled very frequently. Yeah. So, you know, in front of store or in chilled or in categories that are in those growth categories as well, because we know that the association with chilled food is that it's sort of healthier and fresher as well. So some of those categories become really interesting to go into as well from that point of view.
And the sort of the idea that, is it important to you that a vegan burger or a plant-based burger sits next to a beef burger in the store as well? Does that help?
I mean, I don't really have my knowledge on that, because we don't really do meat alternatives. But as a consumer who shops those products, I would say you probably are still in the position where you have to try both parts of the store.
Yeah.
In frozen, it's easy because there's normally a big vegetarian, vegan, frozen section. Yeah. But I think that move is starting to happen. I know some of the big customers that we work with have vegan or vegetarian or plant-based bays that are going into stores. So I think that's going to become more of a trend. And again, Suzanne and I have talked about this before, but that was kind of how Organic went about its journey.
So Kate, does that mean working with retailers in a different way, do you think?
I think it does. And one thing that I would say working for a manufacturing company is the consumer is actually moving faster than the industry. So it's quite interesting, because the sort of last legislation from the FSA was in 2006 about allergens. And that was about a lack of contamination. But DEFRA actually control vegan and vegetarian labelling. So this like kind of contamination on dairy versus vegan is not actually aligned from the same body. Now, I think, you know, there is an answer coming on that. It will happen. Obviously, there's been bigger political issues going on recently that maybe they haven't quite got to it yet. But I know that everyone in the industry is clamouring out for it. I think it can only be a good thing for manufacturers, for customers, for producers, and ultimately for consumers.
Do you have a timeline for that?
No, I think there's a lot of noise from a lot of different people in the industry who touch the industry in different ways. So I'm sure it will come around in the near future. But I think that will help make the consumer choice easier. And I think the biggest probably opportunity that we see for the future is about making great products. So they may be plant-based, but as well as being plant-based, what Suzanne said is so true, they have to taste brilliant. You know, no one wants to make a compromise anymore. The plant-based consumer wants moments of indulgence and moments of being healthy. So then you have room for manufacturers who want to make it the healthy plant-based end, or who want to make it the really indulgent plant-based end, because everyone just wants to have the element of choice. And as that started to grow, people's appetite for it only increases, yeah. Whether that's in a supermarket or online ordering your food.
That's fantastic and comprehensive. I love that. Okay, Tom, what's the future, certainly for the next year, for delivery's relationship with plant-based food, and likely growth, if you've got any projections for...
Yeah, and predicting growth on delivery is always crazy, because we grow sort of triple digits most years. And I think I'm going to pick up on some of the things that we talked about already. I mean, the way we think about it is convenience and choice. So I think in 2020, what we'll see is making, you know, plant-based vegan eating just even more convenient. And what that means is more options on the platform, more options that work for delivery. I think one of the things that's interesting in our environment is, because we're an online business, rather than having to move things around the aisle in the supermarket, it's much easier for our restaurant partners to say, hey, actually, in January, we're going to put vegan burgers at the top of the menu, and nudging consumers to make slightly different choices, because you've made it super easy. They just have to like press with one finger and not scroll as much. That's just a really simple thing that we've done before. We do with, you know, throughout the year with various other options as well. So I think in 2020, you know, this mega trend is not going to go away. We'll see more partners wanting to do that. We'll help them with that. So that's kind of the convenience side of it. And then choice. I completely agree with Kate. I think this idea of giving consumers indulgent food So, you know, being able to get that plant-based burger that still tastes incredibly good, looks great, it's, you know, really Instagrammable, and doesn't feel like you've sacrificed something. So we've got some really cool stuff that we're going to be launching early next year with some burger brands and some other food categories as well, and that's really about acknowledging that, you know, it shouldn't be about sacrificing taste and pleasure. It should be about still having that great burger or pizza or kebab, but having something which is plant-based, because that's the option that you've made. And it also shouldn't be about sacrificing some of the other sort of the taste or the health goals as well. So it's that convenience and choice thing that we'll see. And, you know, if I look at what's happened over the past couple of years in terms of the growth rates that we've seen, so we saw a 160% increase in the number of, like, vegan brands on our platform. With my crystal ball, I suspect we will see at least the same, if not higher, just because we will have more brands that we work with, and that will just increase selection, and we're responding to what consumers are saying. And then in terms of the orders that we've seen, the past 2 years, we saw 330% increase in vegan, vegetarian orders on the platform.
A year or over the...
Over the past 2 years, yeah. Considerably higher in certain cities in the UK. London obviously leads this, but there's some real surprises in there as well. This sits across Edinburgh, Leeds, Bristol, Manchester, Liverpool, and I think we'll see just more of those triple digit increases of people ordering food, because it's easier. There's more awareness of it. It's a cool thing to do now as well. People want to have the option. And that's, there's just this kind of this flywheel of more choice. It's easier to get hold of. You can see it in your local supermarket. You see it on Deliveroo. You see it on TV. It's just a more acceptable thing to do, and it's great. It just means more people are going to try it. And my view generally is it's much better to have a large number of people making small, subtle changes, maybe swapping out a meat option once or twice a week for something else, than just a small group of people who've made, you know, very major changes. And this kind of growth of this can only be good for everyone.
And part of the trilogy of points that push people towards a plant-based diet, one of the big pillars of that is the environment. Now, do you think we'll get to the stage where delivery will offer a particular type of delivery? So could you say, I'd like to have a cyclist deliver my food rather than somebody driving a petrol-driven bike, motorbike?
So we have a number of things that we're doing already. So we have, if I think about what we do in London, you don't choose that as a consumer. It's you know, the way we typically work at the moment is like, how do you get the food to you as quickly as possible? But we've done other things that fit around this environmental kind of halo, whether that's reducing the amount of plastic cutlery that consumers are ordering. We've got something at the moment where you can choose to order from restaurants that have got eco-friendly packaging. And one of the big things that's thrown at our industry is you're encouraging people to have more plastic waste and paper waste. Well, what we've done is we've worked with some of our restaurant partners to make sure that they can order from restaurants that have got recyclable plastic. I mean, I didn't know.
And that can make a huge change, because
the
scale
difference. There's some really, like, speaking to our packaging team, there's some stuff that I wasn't really aware of. It's just, if you don't have if you have grease on a cardboard box from a pizza, that's not recyclable. So we've now got inserts that we put into pizza boxes with some of our key partners that mean that the grease is captured on this grease-free paper, and then that cardboard box is recyclable. So we'll keep on doing that. The delivery side of things is really interesting. There's a couple of things going on there. We've got something we're doing in Australia, which is around you can drop off and pick up your order in recyclable and reusable packaging. So I think, you know, as a platform, we will always try and find ways in which the customer can get the food to them in the best possible condition, the quickest possible time. And actually, in a lot of cities, doing deliveries on a bike or a moped or an e-bike is going to be far quicker than doing it by car.
Yeah.
But we don't have a particular steer to say to consumers, hey, order your food from someone on a bike versus someone in a car.
Yeah.
Not yet, anyway.
Yeah, but there's lots of other things going on, which is really exciting. Okay, Suzanne, the future, working with brands and finding out what how that they approach their consumers, what's likely to change? Products, are there ingredients, are there buzzwords, are there any specifics about stuff that you're maybe already working on for 2020?
Obviously, I can't divulge.
But you can give us a
what I'm working
idea.
On.
Yeah.
What I can do, I think, is I'll look at this through a consumer lens, because as Kate said, consumers are probably ahead of the curve, and that's usually where most brands start in terms of insight, what's going on, not just what they're doing, but why are they doing it, and is this likely to get bigger? And I think there are two or three things that I could get. I mean, I think we're at the over 50s, that aging, we are an aging population, and I think there is definitely, within that over 50s, there are mini cohorts, you know, so not we're not all equal, if you like. But I think the health needs specifically and the needs around things like fibre in our diet, those sorts of things, which have been sort of hidden a little bit. And nobody's really found a way to unlock fibre in a really appealing way, for obviously various reasons. But, you know, it is an essential, you know, our gut and our health gut and that how it affects our mood and
do
all that
one
sort of
day
stuff.
Somebody's going to write on their packaging, good for the stool? Wouldn't that be good?
It might work. I don't know.
Basically saying that, really.
Absolutely. It is the more polite way. Yeah. But I do think that I think the evidence behind that is growing massively. And if you think about the connectivity with plant-based, that fibre connection should be quite strong.
So the gut microbiome research is even now it's exploding.
Yeah.
That takes several years to come through.
But it
there's
does.
A huge amount of work being
exactly.
done.
Exactly.
I think you're right. I think it's a very good call, actually, because that is very tightly connected to fibre and the different fibres.
It should be. But the other but around this, and I think we've all touched on it, is that there's a huge push around this securing the future on all levels, whether it's our health, whether it's the planet. You know, that connectivity between that association between plant-based and our future, I think, is really, really strong. And I think I talked about it at the panel. One of the question marks and one of the things that I think could start to come up is it's great doing all this plant-based stuff. Great. How nutritionally rich is it? And do I have to keep supplementing my diet with 50,000 vitamins, et cetera, et cetera? And it's really interesting because the expectation of consumers, I can tell you now, is that if they're going to pay a bit extra for plant-based, that those list of macros and that list of that better actually be right and be doing me some good. Because what will not go work is if at some point somebody unpacks these products and say, actually, they're claiming X, Y, and Z, but actually they're not really doing, they don't actually settle in your system very well, they don't actually do you much good. Or a lot of the plants that we are growing, the soil, the richness of that soil, et cetera, is still not brilliant. So that's the source, not just where it comes from in the world or if it's local or organic, but actually the richness of that soil could equally become quite a competitive playing field.
It's a struggle
based.
Putting all the information that you want to communicate on packaging,
well,
which has limited
you can't
space,
do it. You can't do it on pack. And I think this is where it's actually about staying in touch with your consumer and knowing when is the right time to elevate a message and how to communicate that message. And we've seen it in the world of sustainability. You know, all the initiatives around reducing packaging, except plastic, for instance. That's great, and then the consumer goes, yeah, okay, but I expect you to do that. You don't get any wins for reducing your plastic. You only get a win with consumers when they go, so what's in it for me?
Mm-hmm.
What benefit do I get from this? So I think, you know, plant-based and all this is all great, but ultimately, is the taste enhanced because of this? How exactly am I feeling good because I'm helping to save the planet as part of this? So we're very selfish creatures. It will come down to what's in it for me. Am I still getting my needs met within this new plant-based world or within this world about securing the future? And that will be the bit that will really differentiate brands that will succeed and brands that will come and go.
Yeah.
Because they'll do an initiative, but it won't be enough to bring your consumer on board. And as I said, with our older consumers, the benefits of a lot of plant-based diets around helping that, all the associated issues with aging plant-based could be an incredibly important part of that if it's managed correctly.
It could be really exciting. Let's take the exciting side of it rather than
I getting a bit serious?
Briefly, but then you pulled it back at the last minute.
Yeah, well, the emotional side's quite exciting, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Health
and keeping us positive and keeping us cheerful.
Okay, we're going to have to draw to a close there. Thank you so much. I think that's a brilliant discussion. We've unlocked a lot of the information about the subject. So I just need to say, Kate Yeakman-Smith, Tom Peters and Suzanne Robinson, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Thank you for listening to the Table Talk podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please share a review. If you like what you've heard, find out more on foodmatterslive.com or find us on Twitter and Facebook.